Are you a fan of white elephant gift exchanges?
I'm gonna be honest, not particular. It depends on the rules. I don't know.
Oh.
Not particularly.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are rules? What do the rules have to do with it? What weird versions have you done? Or is it just the standard rules that you don't like?
Well, I think there's specific rule sets that are, like, required for it to be fun.
Okay.
I think the way that white elephant gift exchanges are most fun is, if there are, how do I say it? If there are rules that are put in place intentionally so that it's not, or it is very unlikely for people to just get stuck with a gift.
Okay.
Like, people need to have some sort of agency over what gift they have other than their first draw.
Oh, for sure. I've only ever played that way, where you can do some amount of stealing.
Yeah, so like, I've been involved in ones where it's like,
or actually, maybe
there's one round.
Okay.
So like, so you go through all the gifts, people, you can either choose to open a gift or steal a gift.
Oh, okay, gifts. So that is what I was thinking. I was confused by that. That is how I play, but I've never had an issue with it.
So I find that like, because like, there's going to be some dud gifts, always.
Yeah.
Or gifts that are less desirable. And if you get one of those less desirable gifts initially, doing a blind draw, nobody is going to ever steal it from you. And so it's just your gift.
Yeah. Yeah, you played the odds and you failed. That's the whole point.
But I think it's more fun. I think the funnest part of white elephant gift exchanges is, like, the stealing that goes on, because there's funny social dynamics in that. Mm-hmm. And, like, you actually get a chance. There's kind of, like, tension of, like, getting a chance to, like, oh, I want that thing. How do I manipulate the situation so I can get that thing? And so I think the funner way to do it is either, rather than, like, it ending when everybody has a gift or whatever, you do two whole rounds through everybody, or you steal until all the gifts have reached their, like, steal limit or whatever.
Because
I've always played where it's like a gift can only be stolen three times, and if it's like the third time it's getting stolen, like, nobody else can steal it from you.
Mm-hmm.
And so either playing through, like, going through the rotation of people until, like, items can't be stolen anymore, and you have, like, no options to steal things anymore, because that way everybody has a gift that they intentionally stole.
Hmm.
Or,
I mean, not everyone.
Yes, everybody. It might not be the gift they would have most liked to have stolen, but they took a choice of all the gifts remaining at some point and stole it. There will be one person who gets, like, stolen from last, and there are no steals left on anything. So yes, there will be one person in that situation.
Hmm.
But I find that often, like, there will be someone who will, like, I don't want to say, like, take one for the team, but, like, before that point will intentionally steal the gift that is, or, like, intentionally, like, take or keep the gift that clearly nobody wants.
Hmm.
I don't know. I
feel
opinions.
Like I have to sit
I don't
down
think others and, agree with my opinions, but
I feel like I have to sit down and think through this to see if that's actually, like, if all you're doing is adding an extra step that just happens to make you feel good based on literally nothing, because I don't think the results end up any different. Like, people will still get saddled with a bad gift because they got stolen from if they already had their stealing round.
Yeah, so that's exactly the point, is that I don't think it is fundamentally different, but you feel better about it because you had agency over it.
Hmm. Alternatively, though, in my mind, the point of this kind of an exchange is that you don't have agency over it, and you just have to go into it good-naturedly knowing that, well, I could just get screwed over.
Like, that's fair, but because I feel like there's some filtering that is nice to have. Like, I've done white elephant gift exchanges with people who are, like, allergic to something. And turns, like, they're allergic to nuts. And they got a gift that is all just, like, different kinds of nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just had to, like, give away their gift to everybody at the end, because, like, they literally can't eat their own gift. Whereas if there was, like, additional options for them to steal, like, they would have never ended up with that gift.
That's not necessarily true.
Because there were people who did want that gift, but they had drawn earlier in the rounds, and they never got the chance to do any stealing.
But I'm just saying that if they then stole something, and the thing that they stole didn't have a steal limit left, they could still just end up with the nuts again. Like, they could move their way around.
But it's it's less likely that that's going to happen rather than just like blind luck.
Maybe. I'm not entirely convinced by that line of reasoning.
I take it that you've never been a part of a white elephant gift exchange like this.
No, I haven't.
I would say it's objectively better just from my position, but you can be wrong. It's okay. I sometimes like hanging out with people who aren't as smart as I am.
If I accept your priors, then yes, it is objectively better for you because you're telling me that you like it more. Like, that is what it is. And that's fine. I'm glad for that for you.
I think at a bare minimum, even if it's not that, everybody should have a chance to steal once because it's fun.
Well, everyone does have a chance to steal once as long as they decide not to open up a gift.
That's not what I mean.
I know it's not, but that's what you said.
But not everybody has a chance. I don't agree with that premise that everybody has a chance to steal once.
Not everyone has a chance to steal any of the gifts because that's how random chance works. But...
But as you can tell, I have opinions, and people don't like my opinions.
I'm not saying I don't like your opinion. You literally
just spent 7 minutes arguing with me about it.
I'm arguing that it's inherently better. I'm not arguing that it's like...
I thought you were arguing that it wasn't inherently better.
Well, I'm arguing with your statement that it's inherently better.
Oh.
I'm not arguing that point, right? I guess I'm arguing the topic of whether it is inherently better.
Okay. Have I just misunderstood the whole conversation and we're trying to make the same points and I'm just too dumb to notice?
No, definitely not. I'm not saying your version is like worse or anything. I'm not convinced that it's like necessarily better. I think it's better in the sense of, I guess there's more of it if that's a thing that you care about. But it depends. I feel like it would also depend on the size of this gift exchange. You know,
it definitely does. It can't be like 25 people or something. It definitely gets unruly and is not fun.
Yeah,
I'm talking like 8 people.
Yeah,
no more than 10.
Yeah,
that's definitely a caveat on this style.
I also feel like it in every exchange I've been in. It depends. Either you have to commit to everyone does bad gifts, you know, or everyone does okay to decent gifts with a budget, right? And there's still a spectrum in there. You may not end up with like, ooh, I totally wanted this for Christmas. That's not the point. That was never the point. You know, the point is just to do something fun. And I feel like if everyone properly commits to either of those, the main benefit that your version has is like, sure, stealing can be fun. The being able to like cause a little bit more chaos. I don't like disagree with that as like that could be a fun element, but I just don't know because it's like, so the way that I always play is at the end, the first person who went does have the chance to steal anything.
What if stuff's past their steal limit?
Well, then yes, they can't steal that.
Okay.
At that point, they have the chance to steal anything that is still available.
Yeah.
And then we had discussed this in the moment. We had a white elephant gift exchange last night, for context. So this is fresh on my mind. But we discussed, because one person thought that the rule should be when the first person chooses to steal something, whatever they steal, that's the end of the exchange. And all of us said, no, we've never played that way. If that one person decides to steal, a chain reaction starts. And whoever they steal from can steal from someone else. And so on and so forth, until it hits a point where either everything, to your point, everything is unavailable, or it reaches a point where, you know, someone gets a gift stolen from them and replaced with another gift, and they look at it and just say, yeah, okay, I'm fine with that, and then it ends.
Okay.
So there is, like, an element of what you're talking about, but it's not, like, turn by turn by turn, right?
Yeah.
So, to your point, that does still put the person who is stuck with a bad gift that literally no one wants in that position, but that's going to be the, like, someone will get stuck with that either way, you know? And it still is up to chance based on where you are in the order of the stealing round, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
So, I feel like the fairest way would probably be, like, you snake it. So that you go, like, you know, 1 to 10 for opening gifts, and then 10 to 1 for stealing gifts feels like if you were to do this double round thing, that'd be the fairest way to do it. Because people's 9 and 10 already have almost every gift available to them to try and steal if they so choose. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they should have their ability to, like, have things stolen from them increased in the stealing round, which means you do it in reverse, so that player 2, who had the option to steal the first gift available or open up one, you know, is one of the last people to kind of survey the landscape and try and lock in something that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that when you do, like, the stealing round thing, is it just, like, a straight swap? So I just say, I'm going to take that, you have to take this, and then you're stuck with it? Or does every one of these rounds start a chain reaction like I described?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which way was...
That would be
what I preferred. Because I think it was more that way. Time. And so, in my mind, it was, like, you continue the... Like, you go 1 to 10, and then you go 1 to 10 again, because you almost never make it to 9 and 10 the second time. Because everything at that point has already been stolen enough times, because every single time something gets stolen, it, like, starts snaking through.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
It can be done the other way. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. Because that would make your way, I think, better. In terms of, like, snaking 1 to 10 and then 10 to 1. If it was just, like, one exchange and donezo.
Sure.
Or, I guess that wasn't your way. It was a way you described that I hadn't thought completely about yet.
Yeah.
So I inherently labeled it as yours.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I just feel like giving everyone a chance to steal, because, like, I don't know. The thing that I was thinking of as you were describing it is that the problem isn't necessarily that there's one dud gift typically. There's typically, like, 5 dud gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people with dud gifts end up being able to steal essentially among themselves.
Yeah.
Because they're the only ones with items with steals left.
Yeah.
And so they get to choose the thing that they think is the best out of the crappy things.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of this is, like, if you were to start doing some sort of mathematical analysis of it, you know?
I'm certain it's not. Yeah.
Like, but you're making valid points. It's like, my point was, last night things turned out well. We had a couple of funky gifts, but there were still, like, every gift was something that someone wanted.
Yeah.
At least, like, no one was, like, quote-unquote, stuck with something that sucked.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing that no one was really into was a tie-dye kit.
Really?
Yeah, because what are we going to do with a tie-dye kit, you know? But it did end up with someone probably use it. Hard to tell.
What are you going
to
do with a tie-dye kit? I feel like that's obvious what you're going to do with it. That's just like saying, like, oh, what are you going to do with a freshly cooked hot dog?
Well, tie-dye is messy, and we don't all have the immense amount of space that you have.
Oh, yeah. Oh, me living in my lap of luxury, you know?
I mean, compared to those of us over here, yes. I've been in your apartment.
Yeah. I said that sarcastically, and then I was like, actually, I do live in a 2-bedroom apartment with a garage.
Yeah, you do.
Now I feel a little like an a-hole. Like an ice hole. Ice hole. It's getting cold outside.
Huh. But yeah, other than the tie-dye kit, things were actually pretty reasonable. You know, I think the most desired object appeared to be the lava lamp that someone brought.
Sick. What was the... I agree with you, something you said earlier, of, like, it has to be very clearly planned of, like, dollar limit, or, like, every gift has to be crappy or something. What was the bounds of gift choice?
We were told a limit of $20.
Okay.
But we weren't officially told quality.
Okay.
But I think everyone, I don't know if it was kind of discussed on the side among people, or if everyone in our friend group is, you know, like, nice and is not doing, like, a prisoner's dilemma kind of thing of, like, you know, the kind of game where if you both agree, then you each get 1 point. But if one of you, you know, betrays the other, you get 3 points. But if you both betray each other, you lose a point, that kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
No one seemed to be playing that kind of thing, you know, no one really, there were a few, like, really good gifts. And a few that were just, like, perfectly fine, you know, but, and that's from my perspective, you know, I'm not, like, super, you know, I'm not like, ooh, wow, we got, like, the best gifts, you know, like, out of this exchange, Well, like, they're fine. You know, we got, like, a candle. I ended up grabbing the candle because I had the tie-dye kit. And I was like, well, you know, we're not going to make that mess in our apartment, so I got a candle that Aaron could use. And Aaron got a...
Oh, wait, Mark. Sorry to interrupt you. But so you're saying that even though you didn't get a gift that you liked the most out of all the gifts, you kind of liked your gift because you chose it.
I'm not saying that.
That's what it sure felt like he said. Listeners?
This was in the... my initial gift was a charging bank and some charging cables, like a battery bank. But that got stolen from me during the stealing round.
A battery bank for... Wait, no. Oh, I'm picturing something different.
an external battery pack.
Yeah.
You know.
I was picturing one of those, like, big batteries that you, like, Jackery. Take camping.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, holy crap, someone got a good deal on one of those.
Yeah. Or it's going to explode the first time you try to use it.
Yeah, you can't bring it on any highway or anything, because it's... Yeah. Essentially a bomb.
But yes, it was during the chain reaction stealing section that it was stolen from me. And so then I had to choose something to steal. Because that's just how that part of the game works. And so it was basically, technically I was like, the default, if I had stopped the game there, would have been the tie-dye kit. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which again, Aaron, neither of these things that I was getting, nothing available to me were things that, like, I really wanted. I could have grabbed, like, there were a couple ones that were, like, a puzzle. I could have grabbed a puzzle, I suppose. But I just wasn't in the mood at the moment, so I grabbed a candle. And it worked out fine. But Aaron got basically a wine bladder in the shape of a stocking. And it holds 2.5 liters.
Holy.
Yeah. So... But it seems it might just be a one-time use thing because the nozzle for it had, like, foil on it. And so it was hard to tell if that is, like, just how it ships or is it actually one-time use in some way. Unclear. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
That's what we got.
Well, that sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been a part of White Elephant gift exchanges where it was, like, not... I guess I'm going to describe what I've been a part of. And see if you've had similar experiences. I've been a part of White Elephant gift exchanges where the rule was not that you're not allowed to spend money, but the item that you bring has to be something that you would not feel bad about throwing in the garbage afterwards. Or, like, essentially, like, you're supposed to bring trash. Something that you would be okay considering to be trash. Like, not like literal trash. Don't bring, like, empty candy bar wrappers. But, like, something around, say, your apartment that it's like, yeah, I really don't need this in my life, and I would throw it away. Because, like, maybe someone else will want it, or it's just funny because it's trash.
Mm-hmm. I'm aware of that kind of exchange. I'm pretty sure in high school, we used to do these in youth group every year. Mm. So I'm sure that the spirit of that one was pretty low. When I was a camp counselor, each summer we did like a Christmas in July party. And I think one year we did do, it was like just a straight up, you know, bad gift exchange was my memory. Because mine wasn't a bad gift, but it was cheap. I got like bug spray. This might have been the most useful thing that anyone put in there. But then another year, this was one of my favorites, was we did a weird t-shirt exchange. So it was good. You go to Walmart and just start perusing the graphic tees, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't remember. I know mine was one of those like in Soviet Russia jokes. That's what mine was. I just don't remember what the punchline was of mine in particular, but that's what it was. And it had like a sickle and hammer on it. I was like, all right, cool. That's what I ended up with. But a really popular one every year. There seemed to be a new ridiculous line of tie-dye cat shirts.
Yep.
So those always made an appearance in our t-shirt exchange. So there you go.
Nice. Now I'm thinking of, I want to do a White Elephant gift exchange that's like funny clothing or something is the theme.
Yeah.
Or like dumb clothing. I don't know. I don't know how it would be best to phrase it, but like I'm thinking like, you got to go to, like, a Goodwill or something and pick out something that no one really wants.
Yeah, I think having a theme beyond just price if you, especially if you don't fully trust the people that you're doing this with, or you don't know everyone, is a really good way to do it. So whether that be like, you know, like you said, like go to the store, or like it's a book exchange or a puzzle, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Having like a theme is a really good idea. People can still be screwy in there. You know, you say like, oh, a board game exchange, and one person gets like a really nice copy of Catan, and another person gets stuck with like Candyland or something from their parents' basement. Same with books. You know, is it, you know, do you get like a copy of, I don't even know,
like a fountain, really nice,
the Fountainhead, or or something good,
like a nice hardcover copy of a popular, like at least really good book, or, and somebody gets like a pew Bible.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, maybe Atlas Shrugged. Maybe that's a little, I hope that's not too,
I don't even know if they would sell those in a bookstore.
I have purchased a pew Bible in a bookstore.
Oh, really?
That's funny. Like in college.
Okay. Well, okay. That makes sense. Given where you went.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't think the local Barnes & Noble is carrying the cranberry hymnals from a Lutheran church.
Yeah, they probably don't. I bet you're right about that. I wonder what companies do sell those. I'm sure it's like a dedicated company that just like sells
the organization, whatever organization they contract out to print them for them. Unless the ELCA like has their own printing department, which could be. I don't know.
But I feel like it's got to have gotten spun off into some for-profit thing, right?
I'm looking quickly. So, let's see. Let's look on Wikipedia.
Biblesinbulk.com.
So, the current one is published by Augsburg Fortress, whose parent company is the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America.
Oh.
Headquartered in Minneapolis.
Yep.
Crazy. So there you go. 1517 Media is the new name. Very, very
1517?
Fitting.
1517?
Yeah, that's when Luther put up his 95 Theses.
Yeah.
They're really, just like, really digging in.
That's a deep cut, I guess. Not really, but...
Not really. Pretty shallow as far as Lutheran trivia goes.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's deeper than you think it is. Mm. I don't think people know as much about history as we think they do.
Well, that's definitely true. Like, I've met people who couldn't quite place the decade of the Civil War, you know, for another example.
Oh, I probably can't do that.
You probably could. I believe in you. Or like, you know, remembering the difference between like when was the Declaration of Independence signed? When did America become like, you know, an actual government?
Yeah.
With, you know, governing documents like the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Yeah. Well, Mark, speaking of things based in Minnesota, you want to know what's not based in Minnesota? My guess, just based on pure probability and chance. Liberty Meadows by Frank Cho.
Can I quickly critique that segue?
Sure.
I was literally just talking about the founding of our nation, and this is called Liberty Meadows.
I know.
Okay. Proceed.
No, I won't get too political. and so in the comic for this week, we are set in a kitchen, or actually I'm gonna call it like a break room almost, more of, because we got a dude who's got his name on his shirt, so it feels kind of like he's at a workplace. He's standing next to a microwave, and he's got the microwave open, and he's putting a little snowman into the microwave, like a little two-ball snowman, not a three-ball snowman, a two-ball snowman. And he does not look happy. I want to be very clear. He does not look happy. He's got that, like, 6.5 o'clock shadow, really. And so he puts it in. Clearly starting, you hear the of the microwave buzzing away. And then ping! And he still clearly does not look happy. And then the door pops open. Him still very much not looking happy. And this guy, Tony, his name, just to be clear, I haven't said that yet, says, as a creature pops out of the microwave, I'm going to say like maybe a duck, he says, well, what do you have to say for yourself? And the duck nervously replies back, I won't play with the snowblower again, sir. Ooh.
Hmm.
Do you have anything specific you want to talk about with this, Mark? Are you going to get a snowblower for all the snow you got to blow in snowy California?
You know what? The issue is that my little compressed air canisters just don't do enough. So,
what? Yeah,
take out the big guns.
Your little compressed air canisters? Like the air in a can used to like blow out a keyboard?
Yeah, it's just not strong enough for my keyboards. So, yes. I'm saying that if I were to get a snowblower, it obviously would not be for snow. It would be for, like, dust.
Wait, what? I'm so confused.
That's okay.
How much dust do you have in your apartment?
Far too much. I can tell you that much.
Like a foot thick?
Seems like it some days.
Holy crap, do you cut drywall inside?
I'm gonna no, because it's a dirty city that we live in, and when you open up the windows for but a few hours, you can notice the dust accumulate on things near the window.
I forgot you live in a climate that you can have the windows open a lot of the year.
Yeah. And you kind of have to because we don't have air conditioning, so that's really our only option, but then dust and soot and whatever gets everywhere. And
wait,
it's not like, you know, the air quality is not soot, but like there's always construction going on around us. The air is just like dirty.
You don't have air conditioning?
No. Why would we?
How did
it doesn't
I
get hot?
We mean it. Wait,
well,
it doesn't
it
get
hot.
Hot.
It gets hot when you leave the window closed for a long time and you take showers and stuff and everything just and you cook. That makes
how
it hot.
How did I not know this?
I don't know. I had it in San Diego because I lived in like a modern apartment building and it does get hot in San Diego, but it only gets hot like for a week and a half out of the year here.
Really?
Like, yeah. And by hot, I mean like breaks 80. Most of the time, it's not going above 80.
Really?
Yeah. It's a very temperate region in the Bay, on this side of the Bay at least.
I had absolutely no idea. So is it like a common thing that like places don't have AC?
Yeah.
That's wild.
At least among apartment buildings. And especially, you know, so many of the houses here are like a century old and they haven't been retrofitted for air conditioning or anything. Most of them have some sort of heating. We have like, you know, radiators.
Like radiators, yeah.
Yeah. Which we've never turned on because they're not in convenient places. They're all covered by furniture. So we wouldn't use them anyway. And it's never really felt like we needed to. Maybe like 3 days out of the year, Aaron's been like broaching the idea of turning on the heat. And I'm like, we'll be fine. We got blankets. It's not actually that cold. And I now have I now have several thermometers around the apartment to prove that fact.
Yeah, that's. Can I tell a story? I'm sorry, I'm taking this way off the rails. Because the way you said that, I know it's not what you meant, and you would never be the person to do this. But I used to work with somebody who I didn't particularly like, and others also particularly didn't like them because we didn't feel like they were a very good person. And my favorite story about this person, actually came from before I even knew them. It's a secondhand story, I guess. Oh, like this person was at work, and their wife was pregnant. It was in the summer. And the person was very cheap. Not like, frugal. They were cheap. And so like clearly the type of person, like myself, who like doesn't always have the AC on and like lets it get definitely a little hotter than normal in the summer. And so this person's pregnant wife was at home and calls him, and everyone can like this small office. Everyone can like kind of hear what he's saying to his wife on the phone. And everyone just hears him say to his wife, who's like 8 months pregnant, like very pregnant wife, him say, "No, you don't need to turn on the air conditioning. Come on. 85 isn't even hot."
My God. Man.
And it's just like, the second I was told about that, I was like, yeah, that fits. I 100%, like, I know this happened. There's no chance this is made up because it's too much like something he would do.
Sure. That's wild. San Diego, we would let it get up to around 80 in our apartment before we would turn the air conditioning to like kick it back down, because we had one of those like fancier thermostats where you could just sort of like tell it to like, I don't know, it was easy to tell it to just like get it back down to here and then just like ignore it, you know. It had some useful functionality.
Wait, isn't that how all air conditionings work?
I feel like a lot of them...
Since the 70s?
Well, I know that they have, like, you know, the thermostat part of, like, okay, get it here and, like, maintain.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's get it here and, like, turn off. Like, it was very easy to, like, flip it to, like, a sort of, like, eco mode. Yeah, or, like, it'll kind of, like, it'll turn on very intermittently, but kind of just let the temperature rise back up a little bit. I don't know.
Okay, okay.
Either way, we were also cheap. But, yeah. You know, neither my roommate nor I were pregnant at the time. And I was the limiting factor here. He was perfectly comfortable in hot weather. He was like,
yeah,
you know, like he grew up in India, had no issue with it. But when it was hitting like 80 degrees, I was like, yeah, I think I'd like to drop this back down closer to 70 for a little bit. And it would last like maybe we had to do this once a week because our apartment was pretty well insulated. But yeah, here it's pretty temperate, but you know, honestly, the bigger issue, like sometimes it does get a little hot when we're cooking for a while. And so we want to turn on the, or we want to like open up the windows and turn on some fans. But the bigger issue is it gets really humid just from taking a shower because our bathroom fan is basically non-existent. And so that's also why we want to open up the windows. But yeah, like someday I will do a test. I will like, for your sake, I will like wipe down like the windowsill and then leave it for like exactly 2 weeks and wipe it down again. And then just, if I remember to do this, both for my own sake and for yours, be like, yep, this is what accumulates. It, you don't even have the window open all the time. But you can just see it at like, you know, when I park my car overnight, whether it's in the parking garage or in the open air lot, I just like come back and I just see the like film of light film of dirt on top of everything.
That's so wild.
Yeah.
I guess I just have no concept for, because I feel like where I live, there's a lot of like environmental crud that settles out of the air. Because like I live very close to a very busy road, and like when I park my car outside, over the course of a few weeks, there's like a little film of crud on it. But like it definitely takes a few weeks with no rain for there to be anything noticeable.
Well, you know what? A few weeks with no rain happens all the time here.
Yeah, I guess.
And between that and the active construction going on, and it just like it's just, I know you live near a busy road, but it's like everything here, it's just dense and packed together.
Yeah,
like, that's just the nature of it.
Now I'm thinking about people who did like scientific research into these things, because I know people who do like research onto
like particulate matter in the air and stuff.
Yeah, like urban aerosols and or like aerosols and stuff. And I was like, why aren't, I wonder if the people that I know have like projects in that area.
Could be. I've probably told you about this. Mikhail and I did a project on that in college. We both took the same environmental biology class.
Oh.
And so we were partners for all of the lab stuff that we needed to do. And one of our projects was, initially, we wanted to look at, over the course of a year, all of the particulate matter in the air on every Big Ten campus. And then see if we could correlate that with, like, you know, how well people do in schools, basically. We ended up not getting, like, the amount of data we wanted, but what was very interesting, we ended up just, like, looking at this graph of all of the, like, you know, the rolling weekly average amount of particulate matter over the course of a year. And there was this huge uptick, like, uniformly everywhere. Like, no matter where you were, wherever the baseline was, it was a huge uptick on, like, July 15th or something.
Yeah.
You know, like, right after 4th of July, which was very funny to see, like, just that obvious evidence. So that was just kind of cool. I don't really remember what we concluded about everything at that, but that was the thing we did look at. But it would be cool to see. Yeah. Just, like, because it is hard to tell, you know, if you look at, like, the official air quality, it's typically not bad here at all. You know, you only get, like, a clear and present decrease in air quality when there's all the forest fires going on. But day to day, you don't really think about it. And then I just look around the apartment. I'm like, man, like, I know I've always been bad at dusting, but this is, like, crazy.
Yeah. Does it ever make you wonder, like, should I be, like, wearing some sort of respiratory protection or anything?
I mean, we bought an air purifier a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make sure we have, and that one, that is like the grossest thing, is just the initial filter that you can wash and reuse forever.
Yep.
How fast that gets dirty, man.
And how gross it is when it is dirty.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. Or just like running a Roomba, you know, like just the stuff that's on the ground and in the rug, just running it once and be like, wow, it's, we have such a small apartment and this thing is like full of just dust and stuff.
Yeah, I...
No fun.
Vacuum is one of the chores that I am hating more and more these days.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, oh... Every time I vacuum, I have to empty it out multiple times because it gets clogged with hair.
Well, you know what? Who is also clogged with hair?
Who's that?
Rip Haywire. Maybe. By Dan Thompson. We have a dog kind of standing up, paws up against what I assume is an RV using context clues. And the dog is saying, hey, guys in the RV, come out here. There are Christmas carolers. And we see a silhouette of a man leaning like around the side of the RV. He's in the first frame, not saying anything. In the second frame, he kind of like has his hand out towards his mouth, kind of like he's trying to... It's hard to tell given the how far away that silhouette looks, whether he is having his hand up to like yell or if it's almost like an intent long distance whisper. I can't quite tell. But he's saying, no, no, something to make them mad and bring them out so we can pound them. And the dog looks over and says, gotcha. And goes back to the RV, says, hey, fellas, come out. The price of Christmas trees went up again, and we're arguing about whether Love Actually or Die Hard is the better Christmas movie. And we see from inside the RV, someone is saying, son of a, let's get out there. And the titular Rip Haywire is cracking the knuckles on one of his fists, saying, good work, TNT.
Oh, I just noticed that I like this comic. This is funny. Not this specific, like, what is an instance of a comic called again? We have a podcast where we read comics and I don't know what a single comic strip is called.
I feel like I would just call it's just like a comic. I feel like the comic strip, I don't even know. We'll figure it out later.
I would describe this as like a strip, right? Like a comic strip?
Because I feel like when I think of a comic strip, I think of the whole thing, but maybe not. Maybe a comic strip is the individual thing, and then the comic is just the whole entity. Sure, we'll call it a comic strip. Let's go with that. We'll be consistent.
Either way, I think it's hilarious that we have how many episodes of a podcast where we read comics, and I just noticed that I don't know what to call it. Anyway, no, I think it's funny. Part of it is because I love the name of the dog.
Yes.
I think TNT is a hilarious dog name.
Dynamite name.
Dang it. I missed that one so badly, and I should have just paused and let you hit it. But yeah, like, that's a name I would have never thought to name a dog, and I feel like people, if you suggest it, would be like, that's a dumb name for a dog, but I think it's funny. What do you think about dog names, Mark? What are your thoughts on dog names?
I think...
Like, what kind of dog names are you a fan of? Like, people names? So dumb names?
I personally wouldn't want to use... Like if it's a person name, I feel like I just want to be super careful and be like, okay, what are names that I don't mind that I've never heard, that I don't know anyone called this?
Okay.
You know? Like, that's kind of the first thing, is because it feels weird. Or I guess if it's really far away, like I'm familiar with this person, I don't feel bad naming my dog this name, you know?
Yeah.
But it has to be, I don't know, there's just something about certain names that just feel like they work for a dog. But if it's too, like, generic of a name, it just sounds funny. And it's not a choice I would make.
Okay.
So, you know, for example,
like funny my in favorite. Bad way.
Yeah, yeah. But in like a, just like a, that's kind of dumb. Like, I'm amused, but it's dumb.
Okay.
So, Max's family had a dog named Mike. And that's just like, I would never name a dog Mike personally, but it kind of works for that family. You know, it is just kind of funny.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's an objectively good dog name.
Okay.
I think that the best dog names tend to have two syllables.
Yes.
Because it's good, easier for the dog to make out. Like a single syllable word is just kind of too simple, I think, for a lot of dogs. Like I feel like they are more likely to get confused. Three syllables just feels wrong to like yell, you know? Two syllables is just seems like the right middle point for a dog name. I think that like scientists have good dog name energy, you know?
Yeah.
Like a common one that Aaron and I both like, and we, one of Aaron's old roommates, I think, named a dog this Doppler.
Ooh.
This is like a solid dog name.
That's a great dog name.
But like, yeah, just a lot of science, like famous scientist last names or like semi-famous scientist last names feel ripe for dog names and for some reason.
Huh. I don't know if I agree with that.
I'm not saying all of them. It just feels like there's a pretty good number.
Yeah. I'm currently Googling a list of Nobel laureates, and I'm going to think through this because I think this is going to be a funny thought experiment for me personally. Because I bet there's some that are really bad that I think...
Oh, I'm sure.
Arrhenius, terrible dog name.
Well, we're
Ramsey, great dog name.
There you go. I'm going with the assumption that Bear, we're looking at two syllables, you know, if you limit your search.
Wallach? What do you feel about Curie?
It almost feels like too mainstream. I feel like they would have to be like a little, like a small dog.
Yeah.
In my mind. You know, I wouldn't name like a German Shepherd that.
Okay, I think you're totally right about the scientist last names. A lot of these are actually like really good, and I'm having a hard time. I thought I was gonna have a really easy time finding ones that are horrible.
Yeah.
But like I actually really like a lot of them. Like Langmuir. I feel like Langmuir could work.
It's a little wordy, but I think that could work, yeah.
I don't know about Dubai.
No.
But yeah, these are that I like that strategy. I'm normally, when I think about dog names, I normally like dumb dog names. Not that I would name my own dog, but I love dogs with dumb names. Like kind of dopey human names.
Yeah.
Or just like calling your dog like Pickle.
Yeah.
Or like calling your dog a thing that it isn't.
Yeah.
I find that ultimately, or like peak funny.